This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised. Koru Studios, in association with Dragon Moon Press, presents Chasing the Bard, a podcast novel written and read by Philippa Ballantyne, including the voice talents of T. Morris, P.G. Hollyfield, and Viv Schubert.
Hi, this is J. Daniel Sawyer, the author of Sculpting God and the brand new science fiction spy thriller Predestination and Other Games of Chance. You can find both of these and more at www.jdsawyer.net. Tonight, you'll hear Chapter 18 of Chasing the Bard, but first, the story so far. Will wakes in the Fae, and while he is taken by the beauty of the realm, he's also taken aback by the strangeness. He finds Sive comforting a terribly wounded Oberon. She blazes at Will for his inability to take control of his own power. Now that she knows she is part mortal, she feels she doesn't need the bard. She instructs Puck to return Will to his own world. The trickster sorrowfully does this, but asks Will to remember all that the Fae are. He doesn't think they will survive against the Unmaker. Will returned to his home, but found no comfort in the world of the theater. He knows that as mortal years pass, in the Fae, Sive will be readying for battle. He returns to Stratford and finds some joy in his children. However, he is not alone on that day by the riverbank. A small monster, a creature of Mordant, sees his joy and knows just how to crush it.
Chapter 18. Let the white death sit on thy cheek forever. We'll ne'er come there again.
Oberon lay very still and listened to the dying pulse of his realm. Each labored breath brought him pain and joy. Pain because Mordant had irrevocably crushed his ribs, and joy because each sip of air tasted fae. To his right he could feel Sive's fingers wrapped about his, and they were so hot they burned. But he wasn't about to let go. He and his sister had not been this close since Anu's abrupt departure. He hadn't said what their mother's last words to him had been, but now might be Oberon's only chance to let her know. Through their contact he could feel her body shake, and when she dropped her head down, her hair draped across their linked hands. Sive was angry. Nothing unusual in that, but she was not angry in the normal way, full of arrogant rage that only a fae could muster. Now, in the evening of their rule, she was angry in that dreadful, hopeless fashion previously only mortals knew. The end was near. Oberon gasped as another crack shuddered through his body. Somewhere within, a bone had snapped. His natural fae strength was competing against whatever art Mordant had used, but it was not enough. That mad and terrifying embrace Mordant had wrapped him in was not easy to get away from. Each time Oberon healed, that alien power would flex and drive him a little closer to the end. It would be an agonizing way to die, broken slowly apart from the inside. He wished Moira was alive to hold his hand, or his mother. He wished in the way of the dying another 1,000 impossibilities, but at least he had one chance to set something right.
Sive!
His voice whistled past broken bones and teeth.
Sister, I need to tell you something. Something about Anu.
Her red-rimmed eyes met his, and the need for words dissolved. The siblings had not shared a link for hundreds of mortal years, but now death made it easier somehow. Sive was the elder, but Oberon had always been stronger. Back then, when Anu still breathed and the Fae had appeared unbreakable, he had walked that last moment with his mother. She held his hand so that it tingled with her art. The most beautiful, unknowable creature was Anu, and while that was attractive in a goddess, in a mother, it was less so. Oberon had spent his whole life wanting to know what went on behind those eyes. What could make her smile? They'd ridden fey horses through the clouds, laughing giddily, but had walked the last steep climb up to this very circle, where he now lay gasping his last moments away. But even if Oberon had known, he could not have understood. Time was a weary concept to the fey. Anu's long, delicate hands rested on the ancient stone, and her eyes looked across the evening realm, and her face set firmly. That dreamy, aloof expression she usually wore was absent. "I love you, my son," she whispered, perhaps to make him doubt she had spoken them. "But when I am gone, you cannot rule." It was a double shock. Anu gone and not wanting him to be king? Scythe had never shown any desire to take his place, and the court was ready for a male hand. They'd felt it in the air like he had. Their queen was drifting away from them, and the aura she exuded was that this was right. His mother's finger rested lightly on his shoulder. "Our goddess calls me, Oberon. A power I was given in the dawn of worlds must now be paid for." Tears burned their way down his cheeks, but something held him back from speaking. "Scythe must be queen after I. There are reasons I cannot tell you." Anu's breath caught, and she pulled him into a tight, sudden embrace. "Oh, beloved son, I know you'll do the right thing, but I cannot bide here a moment longer." That scent of warm roses and sunshine filled his head, and he wanted to speak, wanted to release the buzz of questions in his head, but Anu would not stay. She was already dissolving into nothing, falling into another realm he could not follow her to. Oberon raised his hands, tried to grasp her, but just as all the other times, she was an airy enigma, and he was left holding nothing. She wasn't there to see his tears. And now Scythe's eyes were the ones he had to face, as the realization of what he had done hit her. Oberon watched her trace the shapes of hurt, anger, and weariness. He bit his lip as another snap sounded deep inside him and turned away.
"You were right, sister. I was wrong."
Once those words would have been bitter, but now they were barely enough. Scythe clasped his hand tightly. "Still the fool, Oberon. Even if you had come to me, I would not have believed you."
"I could have found a way if I had tried. Anu must have seen this moment. I cannot think why, but there must be a reason you are needed now."
Pain speared through Oberon as another bone snapped like a dry piece of kindling. Sagging back against the ancient stone, he whispered,
"Think hard, Scythe. There must be something."
She was silent, shoulders sagging beneath yet another burden. Finally, the words dragged themselves from her. "My father was human. I just discovered it myself." He should have been disgusted, shocked at the least, but Oberon's heart leapt. With a great effort, he reached out. His fingers barely brushed hers, but Scythe flinched as if he'd struck her. Every word was a struggle, but she had to see.
"Then you might not need a human to break the realms apart. You have both bloods within you."
He dropped back, exhausted. Scythe brushed back, forming tears from her eyes, and smiled falteringly at him as the idea began to settle. "I believe you had your first workable idea." It would be a scene that Will would remember for the rest of his life. Anne, Susanna, and Judith were all there, of course, but it would be his son's open, happy face that would haunt him through all the nights to come. And above it all would be that he had not told Hamnet that he loved him, that he had only showed as much affection as his own father had done to him, a brisk ruffle of the hair, and admonishments to look after his mother and sister. That was all young Hamnet had had from his father. Will had only been back in London a scant week when the summons came. He was rehearsing scenes with the excited troupe when, looking up, he saw the grim-faced Hamnet Sadler standing near the door. His old Stratford friend had occasionally journeyed to London, but his expression said it all. His son had been named to honour this man. Life was full of unkind ironies. Taking his horse, he rode hard through the night. Not even the threat of the animal dropping slowed him, but Will was still too late. Anne's scrubbed red face and empty look told him all. All the remaining life had been sucked from her eyes. Brushing past his family, clumped uncertainly near the stairs, Will went right to his son's room. The still form on the bed was not Hamnet. His spirit had already fled. Will froze at the door, unable to go any farther, part of him thinking that if he didn't look into the boy's blank face, it wouldn't be. Someone moved up behind him. His mother's soft hand, not Anne's, fell on his shoulder. The faint smell of lavender recalled the comfort she'd given him in youth. How he wished adulthood permitted him that now.
"What happened?"
he asked hoarsely, throat tightening about reined in tears.
"A sudden fever, Will. It came up the day after you had gone. It carried him from us so swiftly."
Such things could not be. Looking into her pained and weary eyes, he saw the truth. She, who had birthed and buried two children before he even breathed, knew it. There could be no denying death. Life was hard, and loss far too easy. Patting her wrecked hand, Will whispered,
"I'd like to be alone with him."
She nodded and retreated, letting her son grieve as she had once done for her own dead babies. Will approached cautiously, dragging his unwilling body to Hamnet's, until at last he stood at the foot of the narrow, tiny bed. The body of his boy looked peaceful as they said the innocent should lie. Will had seen all kinds of death in his time, a knife in the night, the agonized swellings of the plague, the gentle retreat of a woman after childbirth. But this was different. This was his boy.
"Don't leave me behind, sweet Hamnet. Without you, all is silence,"
Will whispered, but his boy could no longer hear him. Looking down into that face which had been so precious to him, he suddenly wondered if he had taken up Sive's challenge, if he had surrendered his soul and become immortal. Could not his children have been immortal too? The idea dropped him to his knees, so that fingers clenched in bedsheets and breath fell on a son who would breathe no more.
"What have I done to you?"
he whispered to Hamnet. No mortal ear would have been able to hear the sound. Indeed, Will did not hear it, but he sensed it. At first he sat rigidly still, heart beating in his head, but it was there, a furtive, dry rustle under the stool by the window. It was neither the patter of rats' feet, nor the dry creaking of the old house. It was something that should not have been here in this human realm. As long as Will didn't look, his world would remain the same as it had for the past year. As long as he did not turn and look over his shoulder, all would be as it should. But this was his son lying dead, and the truth was more important than comfort. So when the noise rattled against his brain again, he turned his head slowly. The ragged little shadow underneath the stool glared back at him, confident that mortal eyes could not see it. Except Will's eyes were not completely human, and they never had been. The creature grinned, its own eyes flat and malicious, locked on its work, the dead son. Will roared and sprang up from the bed. Picking up the little table by it, he hurled it with all his might at the evil little shadow. It dodged with ease. Below, his family was no doubt raising their eyes to the ceiling, hearing the maddened man thump and rage above. Such unseemly displays of grief were best ignored. Will, of course, didn't care. He chased the malicious scrap of shadow around the room. The creature was not, however, of the human realm, and far faster than Will's very human reflexes. It stuck its little hooked feet into the daub of the wall, grinning wider, and then, worst of all, it spoke.
Mordant laughs, puny human. Your line will end. No son for the enemy of my lord.
Will, half blinded by tears, felt his heart shatter, his grief a very real hardness in his throat. He had done this, denied all he was, and left his family unprotected. How foolish he had been to think that he could meddle with the Fae and not draw any danger to those he loved.
If I had not been so foolish, could you not have lived?
Art bloomed behind his eyes, rushing through his body like water suddenly let loose from a dam. He felt flooded by it, carried away by its strength. The shadow, too late, realized its mistake. It should not have stayed to gloat. It proved to be a fatal error. Will's hand lashed out, holding nothing but his newfound art, and where it pointed, golden light followed. His voice found words that seemed to bite in the air.
I shall have my revenge, foul and unnatural creature.
The malicious shadow was trapped in the light. It squawked in terror. The mortal's expression was calm, but his grey eyes were not. They swirled and sparked with art and immeasurable rage. Grabbing the slayer, he held it struggling aloft.
I will kill you in 150 ways. Tremble and despair.
He didn't even need to think, for his art had already plumbed the depths of horror and now obeyed his grief. The light snapped, sending the room into complete whiteness. When it faded enough for Will to see again, only a sprinkle of fine dust on the floor told of the creature's fate. Will sunk once more to his knees. It was not that he felt drained. He had never felt better. But it was a sudden realization that his path was chosen. He knew full well that there was no going back now. He would track Mordant down and dispense justice with the gifts that fate had given him. Art and all the rest. No other choice remained now. And of course, that path would lead Will back to her. Scythe the Shining. The darkness leapt into the light. The evening realm was invaded. But even as Scythe stood with her cousin Puck and knew this could very well be the end, she felt the surge of her true nature. Scythe's heart thundered under her ribs, and every inch of her skin prickled. She had never fought in the Fae, nor had this much to lose. At her back were her people, and while she drew strength from their presence, she wished them out of harm's way. Each life behind was precious. Scythe settled her fingers more firmly around her sword and murmured a prayer to their goddess. Puck shifted nervously at her side, and sitting in a ragged apple tree not far away, Marka croaked her own battle cry. No soaring above the battlefield today for the raven. Her wings were still crushed, but they would share the same fate. The moor into the between was gaping wide now, and there couldn't be much time left. Their plan would have to work the first time. They both knew that. As badly as Puck wielded a sword, he was still better than most of the Fae. Scythe's people were a gentle race, who sang music and danced rather than fought. Brenna and those who had been part of Anu's guard were their strongest arms and their only real hope. This battle could only be short, so her mission would have to be rushed. Puck shifted uncomfortably.
So, this is what a last chance looks like.
Once we are gone, the mortals will be next. Scythe's lips compressed and went bone white. And then they will regret being so foolish. By they, she of course meant he. Puck shook his head.
You turned Will away, cousin, and he would have tried.
He had nothing to offer, she spat. I have all the blood that we will need. They both knew the price of failure. What remained unsaid, however, was her desire to have Will live, even if it was only for a little longer. The between finally gave up its nightmares, all claws and hungry eyes. They spilled into the Fae. The scent of decay and despair followed obediently, rolling out and cutting into the ranks of the Fae long before the real enemy did. The dark shadows that moved towards them were hard on the eye and difficult to judge. Alien claws and legs churned up the green earth. Scythe pulled loose her sword, drawing her people's gaze away from the destruction, and let the cry she'd been holding in leap forth. A light arises! Forward the folk! It was from the Elder Days, the dawn of worlds, and her mother's battle cry. Oberon had whispered it to her through torn lips, before surrendering himself to unconsciousness. That tortured face Scythe kept in mind as she and her people leapt forward like greyhounds off the leash. Not one of them faltered, even in the teeth of the nightmare, and a mass of their art came alive, for wherever the Fae went, they were never entirely unarmed. Art surged ahead in bright ribbons of light. Silver blossomed from Scythe, Puck's strands of ochre arced to her left, and a thousand other colours. Against the stench of the Unmaker, Fae music blossomed, and the light of art blended to a blinding white. Where it touched, the shadows were forced back, snarling and snapping like mad hounds, or, if they were not quick enough, simply unravelling them to nothingness. It did good to all hearts that saw it. But the Fae brightness was very little compared to the power that rushed at them. The howling darklings were urged on from something that lay beyond the open between portal. Driven to snarling, foaming fury, they tumbled like a dark wave through and over the art of the Fae, heedless of the brood they lost. The physical battle was joined, and the combatants finally came fist to claw. Scythe howled, the sound ripped from her deepest being, belling out across the battlefield, and in it was the sound of ravens. Bright ecstasy consumed everything, even as a savage claw slashed her head. Still the pain could not reach her, and even as the sundered helmet fell apart and blood coursed down her neck, she felt her immortal heart would break with joy. This was the way for a goddess to die.
Now, quickly, Scythe!
Puck's voice in the chaos of battle sounded in her head.
Do what you need to!
She caught his gaze through the slashing weapons and heaving bodies. It could not be mistaken. Her aunt's eyes looked back. But now was the time for action, not grief. Breaking loose from the press of attackers, Scythe fell back to clear ground. A sudden, vice-like grip on her shoulder nearly ended in her slicing maka from her shoulder. But the raven, even dishevelled and wounded, knew her proper place. Scythe's heart lightened a fraction. Move swiftly like the eagle, she reminded herself. Each moment is another Fae life. She broke open the veil and moved into the mists of nothingness. The heaving between wrapped itself about the raven and Fae, eerie in its sudden quietness. With Mordant's creatures busy, Scythe might just have a chance to do what needed to be done. Mouthing a quick prayer to the Mother of All, Scythe walked the misty ways to find the point where the three realms joined. Maka crooned fearfully to herself and hunkered down tighter on her mistress's shoulder. Unhappy though the raven was, it was still good not to have to tread these paths alone. Very little imagination was needed to see things in bright between. Clenching her teeth, Scythe went on. She had never been to the Nexus, but the memory of Anu's journey there made the finding of it easy. Still, the sharp beauty of the place when she actually saw the huge crystal stones crushed her ribs and made her eyes burn. Scythe could only wish she had time to sit and look at the mother's wonder. Forgive me, goddess, she said as she passed as unseeing as could be managed onto the central gleaming pillar. Just as Anu had noticed, each pinprick of light that radiated through it made her skin prickle. It was a disturbing and yet erotic feeling. But the question still remained, what should she do? No textbooks had been written on how to undo the mother's work. No one had ever mentioned how the breaking of realms might be achieved. Only art held a possible solution. Scythe stepped uncertainly forward, blinking her eyes against the swirl of colours the Nexus let out. Maka pressed her feathered head against her ear, and suddenly it was as if a conduit between Scythe and the goddess was opened. She let a breath go and let her art have its way. It shot along her abused synapses like lightning, reminding her how half alive she felt when it was not there, and pushing back the tide of humanity that had lately been sneaking up on her. But not too far, Scythe reminded herself, for that too would be needed. By the light of her power, Scythe could see the thick bindings of the realm, like silver umbilical cords tying the three realms together. they turned and spun to their own rhythms, weaving strange patterns on the surface of the Kingstone. Scythe kept her eyes averted from the shattered realm's light, but could see the dark canker that was beginning to spread. Not knowing what else to do, Scythe reached blindly out. Grasping the bindings, she could feel the pulse of light within them, but could not halt now. A deep breath, a summoning of all the art she had, and with a scream, she thrust at the ribbons of life. Her power flared like a sunburst in the misty between, scalding the ether with its might. Scythe's insides burned, and her art felt stripped bare. But still, only when she had no more to give, did she let go. Head spinning, Scythe tried to find herself in the barren space left behind. She had touched the Mother of All's art and found the measure of her own tiny in comparison. Everything had gone into that moment, but the bindings of the realms still remained unmoved by her efforts. So Scythe lay shuddering in the mist, trying desperately to think beyond the now, find the answer and save her people. And then, like a gentle caress, the voice reached her. Daughter. Of a thousand impossible things, this was the one she could have never expected. Time held its breath as Scythe looked slowly up into her mother's face. "What are you doing, Scythe?" Anu's violet eyes were as hard as gems, offering nothing like the welcome her daughter had often dreamed of. Stumbling to her feet, she reached for Anu, questions bubbling in her mind. "Where have you been? What happened to keep you away from the Fae? Don't you care about me?" But Anu slipped back a little, nothing about her flawless features betraying any emotion. "The realms must remain bound." It was incredible how the Elder Fae could be so callous. No one had ever found out what had happened to her in the between, and now she stood there, not batting an eye at her daughter's distress. A chill scampered up Scythe's spine, and she dropped the half-raised hand she had turned towards Anu. The two women now eyed each other as warily as any stranger. And then a hint of an icy smile twitched Anu's mouth, like she'd been caught out. Or more precisely, the puppeteer realized he had been discerned. Scythe swallowed hard, but managed to sound vaguely calm. "You didn't ever think I'd be fooled by this, did you?" A sibilant laugh broke out of Anu's throat, like a rough hand shattering a beautiful mask, and the voice that followed could have sent weaker beings into insanity. "But this is your mother, Scythe. Why, you haven't even given her a kiss." Perfect lips parted to reveal a void of darkness behind, which promised nothing but a need to swallow realms. In that emptiness, the destroyer lived. Scythe neatly sidestepped the suddenly reaching arms. "My mother is dead." She inched further away around the curve of the Kingstone.
Perhaps.
The Unmaker twitched Anu's head in a mockery of agreement.
"She knew that I had marked her at the ceiling. So she disappeared into the between, gave up her crown and children to save her realm. But she shouldn't have bothered, for today it perishes."
Scythe ground her teeth but kept her anger in check. The Unmaker chuckled.
"First, of course, her daughter dies."
It was said so conversationally. The sudden lunge almost caught Scythe. She had been expecting her opponent to gloat a little more, but the Unmaker was not mordant, and that mistake almost proved most expensive. The blow caught Scythe's half-turned head and knocked her feet from under her. Every bone rattled, her body spasmed against even this proxy touch from the Unmaker. This force of destruction horrified everything made by the Mother. It looked down on her for a moment, deciding her fate as calmly as a human crushing a fly.
"No matter what the prophecy says, you are still more dangerous alive."
Prophecy? Scythe stammered, hoping at least to get on her feet to meet death. Anu's lips pursed.
"It would be good to have control of the between, to travel to more realms. But I cannot wait for your child, when you are causing so much trouble."
Scythe could not understand what it meant, but was deeply angry that there would be no chance to discover the answer. Something flexed behind the eyes of her dead mother, and they changed to a deep void in which only pain and death awaited. Brigitte would not be silent, and it was quite difficult to tackle a battle while an undead fae was rattling on in one's head. Puck strained upwards with his sword, trying heartily not to allow the flexing claws of his opponent to reach him. What could possibly be keeping Scythe? Surely separating the realms would not be taking this long. Already the line of fae was breaking apart, and as they gave ground there were fewer and fewer of them. The trickster couldn't even give enough concentration to his aunt's voice to understand what she was rattling on about. He was already bending at the waist as a creature's full weight was pressed against his blade. The sound of its dark insect carapace on the steel was high-pitched, as unforgiving as the monster itself. Puck felt like he was going to snap in two at any moment. He dared to free one hand from his pommel and groped for his ankle. Finally, his fingers found the silver dagger he'd stuck there at a whim. When he slammed said blade into the creature's chest only 3 inches from his own, it made a resounding shudder. The precious fey blade sang and died in such a spot. But it did the job. Now the monstrous dead weight pushed him to the ground. He was terrified of another its kin taking the opportunity and using all his best wriggling skills to get hurriedly out from under it. In that heartbeat, Brigitte finally made herself clear. The sudden bellow made his head ring.
They're leaving!
And so they were. Puck wiped his sweaty and bloody forehead and watched in exhausted amazement as the grim tide ebbed back to the gap in the between where they had come from. It could only have been a few minutes before, but it could just have easily been hours in the Fey realm. Beside Puck, the survivors, numbering in the bare hundreds, let out a solid cheer. They had beaten them! The trickster threw up his arms and shook his sword to the sky. The Fey had triumphed! But as always, Brigitte had to spoil the moment.
No, you foolish boy. They were called back. Scythe is in trouble. The Unmaker has need of all his power. That is why the Horde has retreated.
Swelled with fear for his cousin, Puck caught the shoulder of his nearest surviving soldier, Brenna, with her hair matted and her face bruised.
Pull back and regroup, he told her. Scythe needs my help. If neither of us come back, do your best.
Once she would have laughed at any orders from the trickster. Now she merely nodded and did as bid.
Quickly, lad, the Nexus!
Brigitte's urgency gave wings to his tired body. His art felt limitless at the moment. He pulled open the veil and crossed quickly into the treacherous mists of the between. They thrashed and boiled around him as he ran with fear in his heart. Puck shifted skin, wearing his dark-haired man form, thickly muscled and capable of earning more respect. The Unmaker would not care either way, but it made him feel stronger. He tried to ignore his aunt's dire warnings. He had not taken any notice when she wailed into his brain that Scythe was not the one to break the bonds. She had the blood, but only the bard had the mother's gift to do it. Puck was angry with himself for ignoring the obvious. He'd let himself be carried along by his cousin, and now she would be the one to pay the price. The Unmaker was massing his power, ready to strike at the Dark Goddess. The mists knew it, and so did the trickster. He saw Scythe, and his heart began to beat again, but then his eyes felt as though they were melting in their sockets. Brigitte had seen the Unmaker before, and it was just the same. And what further horror it was that wore the shape of Anu. Scarcely knowing who it was that moved his body, Puck stepped between the Unmaker and his cousin. He was so terrified that he felt as though his brain might melt in his head. Only Brigitte held him upright. Puck's hands drew out the dim shape of the Great Seal. Not much remained of its power, the lines etched on it fading even by the second, but it might yet gain them a heartbeat.
Quickly, cousin,
Puck's mind whispered to Scythe's.
To the Fae while we can.
But Puck wasted no words on the Unmaker. He only held the worn stone seal up before him in clenched white fingers that were no longer shaken. Anu's lips peeled back in a hideous snarl.
That trinket won't save you now, Brigitte.
It was indeed his aunt's voice that rang from Puck's chest, but not the tired, bitter tones he would remember, but the sweet and proud call of the Fae who had seen the dawn of worlds. The voice that bubbled up, rich with power and confidence, spoke words of such art that even the between mists bucked in response. That part that remained of Puck did not know what they meant, but hoped they spelled safety. The seal in Puck's hands hummed, and white lines shot forth and drew themselves against Anu's face. She cried out once, sounding like the aunt he recalled. But there was no time for horror or regrets. Puck grasped Sive's hand, and with an odd gesture he threw an invisibility glamour over the both of them before tugging her into the between. Puck's heart was thrown into his throat, and abused Art flinched against the torrent of power Brigitte had released, like a storm around them. He dared not stop and think how she had done it.
No time and no chance to fight, Brigitte's mind said into his. The Great Seal is almost broken. Only enough remains to hold the Unmaker's physical body in the Shattered Realm. Flee!
Puck, obedient to his aunt, tugged Sive about like a whip at the end of his fingers, grown suddenly strong in both art and muscle. They had reached the spot where the Fae could be seen, dimly pulsing through the edges of the mist. The trickster had her by both hands, and a look held her still.
We have held them back as long as we can, cousin.
His hands tightened on hers.
Now we need Will.
Sive's face came as close as it had to crumpling.
He won't come.
Brigitte was seeing more than Puck could imagine, as if her lack of body only made her more powerful. The bard's path was clear to both of them.
He will, cousin. We should be ready for him.
It was either sad or wondrous that Sive the Shining grasped such a small hope so easily. The weather cleared, for perhaps with the going of the Shadow Demon, it was free. It was the sun climbing above the scattering cloud that reminded Will that he still breathed, and if he was going to be able to live with himself, he had to make his son's death at least a little meaningful. They had buried Hamlet 2 days before, and although his friends would be expecting his swift return to London, he had already decided against it. Other, far more risky dealings were called for. Anne was making a great show of getting on with things, though her grey skin and haunted eyes told of a far deeper pain. Will had little to give her. Perhaps all he had ever been able to give her in this life had been the children. Sive had taken all the rest in that respect. And he had to reach his fey lover, and although his art was in full flowering, he knew nothing of how to part the veil and step into the fey realm. He had not paid much attention when Puck or Sive did it. So there was only one place to go. Saddling his horse and strapping his sword to his side, Will rode purposefully to Arden. The sweet chill air and the beauty of the day he recognised, but they did not truly touch him. The sun he had lost still occupied his vision, and the dull heat of vengeance kept him company on the journey. Arden Wood was still a place of magic, and even Will's rise to adulthood hadn't stripped it of that. As he reined his mount in, he recalled with sudden vividness that dramatic attack when he had been younger. Sive's revelation had stripped that old glamour from his eyes. Dismounting, he tied his horse to a nearby tree and breached the forest's defences. He had an adult's height, of course, and an adult's perception, but it all came back to him. The excitement turned to terror, and that wonderful clear moment where his art called to him for the very first time. A vital part of Will thrilled to its musky wood scents and hint of magic in the air. He had hoped that this alone would tell him how next to proceed, that he would know how to reach for the Fae. But if the forest knew the answers, it was not telling him. A profound lance of despair went through him. Failure, not something he knew much of, but at this point he felt crippled by it. Will's grief escaped him, and tears he would have never shed in front of even his own family fell to the waiting earth. The voice, when he finally heard it, was soft and tinged with the burr of the north. It was so low that he had first taken it for the wind in the trees. But even then, I knew you'd be special, lad. Marked by the mother and watched by fair folk. I knew. Will brushed his hair back from his eyes and followed the voice to its origin. At first, he almost missed the speaker as well. The old woman's tattered and stained garments were brown, like the trees she rested against. She looked as old as the hills, but there she was, propped against the knotted tree as though it was a comfortable bed. Her face was not turned to him, and the way her ancient face was raised to the treetops, it appeared as though those were her audience.
Don't I know you?
Will ventured closer. She shifted a little, perhaps finding a better patch of bark to rest against, and smiled at the sky.
I would say you do, young William. It was me that guided you into the world over 30 years ago.
He recognised her now, old Bess, the midwife.
She had not been seen for many years, not since her granddaughter had taken over her work in the village. She couldn't have been sitting here all this time, living off air and sunlight. Bess's eyes were closed, but the angelic smile on her lips was something to behold. It was as though she looked into the face of God. "The mother loves a midwife," she murmured, folding her hands on her lap. "Blessed are we that help new life into her world." Now Will felt a shiver of power up his spine, making each individual hair tremble erect and his muscles shake.
"Old mother, you shouldn't be out here all alone."
A faint chuckle. "So much art, so little brain, lad. I am not alone. This is the best and last place for me to be. I'm here to meet her." The hint of blasphemy was enough to send Will's church teachings into overdrive. Bess gestured that he should sit on the cool earth close to her. "You don't say it, Will, but you are afraid. Afraid to burn in your Christian hell. But she is not your enemy. She is merely another face of God. Older and more mysterious, but the same." It was certainly not a teaching that the local vicar would have agreed with, but it made sense to Will. He dropped down beside the old woman and tilted his head to the sun as she was doing. With the faint breeze moving over his face and the strength of the oak against his back, everything was a little more peaceful. "It's almost my time," Bess said, as conversationally as a piece of town gossip. "She is near." Will should have been afraid, should have leapt up and made for his horse, but such a mantle of peace had settled on him that he could not. Bess's wrinkled and toughened hand stole into his, and her voice when it reached him was very deep and very sweet, like a drip of honey on the curl of his tongue.
"Don't be afraid, William. Open your eyes."
Will sighed and looked away from the sun into Bess's suddenly revealed face, and straight into the eyes of the mother. In that split second he knew that this was love, unlooked for and yet given. No judgment was in the goddess's gaze, no disgust at anything he had ever done or said, only complete acceptance. His soul and his life were precious to her. Will wanted to sink into that love and never stray from it. In the eyes of age, the mother of all was as beautiful as the oak against which she rested.
"We see each other finally, William, you and I,"
she smiled.
"And I have been waiting for you for so long."
He could hardly breathe with joy. She eased her hand from his and instead stroked his curls away from his eyes.
"You are the one bard I dreamed of, all alone in the Unmaker's darkness, even before the dawn of worlds."
"A goddess could dream,"
he thought dimly.
"And she thought of me?"
"Accept all that you are, William, and Mordant will be defeated. I have given you all you need to succeed, but it must be your decision to do so. Scythe needs you, but your gifts are your gifts alone. You know how to reach her, William. You always have. The veil cannot stop you."
Despite his love for Scythe, he didn't want to leave the mother, knowing that he would never see such again.
"You will, if you care to,"
she whispered.
"Now go to her, and leave me with Bess. We have much to talk of."
Will dragged himself to his feet reluctantly, and saw what she said was true. He could see the veil before him like a finely spun spider's web. It was as easy as brushing it aside to find his scythe. You have been listening to the award-nominated fantasy novel written and read by Philippa Ballantyne. Some sounds from the Free Sound Project and soundsnap.com. To order your print copy of Chasing the Bard, visit amazon.com or dragonmoonpress.com. And to find out more about the author, the podcast, and the voice talent, please visit www.chasingthebard.com.
We hope you're enjoying this free serialized audiobook. If you like what you're hearing, please tell a friend. Better yet, tell a friend and leave a contribution for the book at podiobooks.com. At least 75% of your donation will go straight to the author or producer. So please, be generous. And thanks for listening.